great to have you here. Well, the Lord is here with us, isn't he? I just loved that worship. Thanks so much, Sam, for leading us. And just an amazing sense of the presence of God here with us. My name is Andy. I'm married to Rachel. We've been part of the staff team for the last 5 years or so at KXC. And it's been an incredible adventure over that time. I remember sort of 6-7 years ago, we were praying about what God would have us do for the next season of our lives. And we had this passion for the church. And as we prayed, Pete and Bea invited us to come down here. And we haven't looked back. It's been an incredible adventure. You know, we probably all to one degree or another have this longing within us for this sense of significance, for our lives to count for something more than just the kind of the 9-to-5, the little micro family that we might have. And the amazing thing about the God that we serve and the God that we are in relationship with is that he has woven us into his big narrative, his story. We are just like Pete, if you were here at St. James's last week, was sharing about the Christmas story. This genealogy of Jesus has this thread running through it of just different people's lives, broken lives that God had made new, had restored with this beautiful golden thread that goes through it. Today we're going to look at the person of Joseph, who is the adoptive father of Jesus in the Christmas story. So there is a Christmas part to this message. You'll be relieved to know. But this idea of significance, perhaps in previous generations, people would have thought of things in terms of what legacy am I leaving when I die? What has my life meant for? Perhaps in our generation, the idea of fame and significance is a big thing. And the closest, I don't know how close you've got to a 5 minutes of fame. The closest that I've got in the last couple of years was this. It was a tweet that I sent out. I was I happened to be in Regent's Park one day, and up pulls this buck, this bus, and out gets an entire football team. And I thought these guys look quite good, and I went over and stood at the side of the pitch and realised that I could see Jurgen Klopp there, and it was the Borussia Dortmund team over to play Arsenal, and they happened to be practicing in Regent's Park. So anyway, I quickly took a picture, tweeted it, and you know, things went wild. I got all of 146 retweets, including the Daily Mail, including the Tory Graph. I can't remember. There's a few others as well. And but that day felt like, wow, actually, I'm kind of to some tiny degree in the national consciousness because of my tweet, which was a terrible picture and a terrible quote. But there we go. So, but I don't know about what it is, what that looks like for you as well. But let's crack on and let's get into the passage that we're looking at today, Matthew 1, verses 18 to 25. So, if you want to just follow it up on the screens, I haven't actually looked at what page it is in the Bible. This is how the birth of Jesus the Messiah came about. His mother Mary was pledged to be married to Joseph, but before they came together, she was found to be pregnant through the Holy Spirit. Because Joseph, her husband, was faithful to the law and yet did not want to expose her to public disgrace, he had it in mind to divorce her quietly. But after he had considered this, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream and said, "Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take home Mary as your wife, because what is conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit. She will give birth to a son, and you are to give him the name Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins." All this took place to fulfill what the Lord had said through the prophet. "The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel," which means God with us. When Joseph woke up, he did what the angel of the Lord had commanded him and took Mary home as his wife. But he did not consummate their marriage until she gave birth to a son, and he gave him the name Jesus. Okay, so this sense of our small lives, our micro lives, being formed being woven into God's macro story, this idea of significance. We have in this passage these two people who in many ways their lives are not remarkable until God takes hold of them. And just to give a bit of context to this passage to start off with, if we were going to look at different levels, whether it be a macro or a micro, this is kind of on the macro level. So I've got a little screenshot here of what we're kind of looking at, the regional and the national thing of what's going on in Israel. And the first thing you need to know is that the book of Matthew is a narrative, but it's not a novel. There's so much in this story, but there's so much that's not in this story that we would love it to be if it was a cracking novel. But what its purpose is that it's written to the Jewish people to show them that this person, Jesus, is the Messiah that they've been waiting for. So firstly, in this moment in history when BC became AD or thereabouts, the Roman Empire was the ruling force of the day in all its pomp. And Israel was ruled by Rome. There's a clash of kingdoms going on between the Roman Empire and the kingdom of God. Caesar Augustus had just defeated all other claimants to his father's, Julius Caesar's, title and unified the Republic of into an empire. He was so powerful that people would refer to his father Julius Caesar as God and him as son of God. And he calls this census of the entire Roman world in this moment that everybody needed to drop what they were doing and travel back to their hometown. And there's an irony here that as Augustus, this self-appointed son of God, sits comfortably on his throne, thinking that in ordering everybody to take part in this census, he has the whole world in his control. He's actually fulfilling a prophecy about the true Son of God being born in this small part of his empire in a town called Bethlehem. The act of Joseph and Mary traveling to Bethlehem transports them to the place where the prophecies had said that Jesus would be born, the true Son of God. And the second piece of background you need to know is that the sort of the Messiah that the nation of Israel was longing for. They'd been under oppression of different empires for centuries. And this understanding of this messianic figure that was going to come and rescue them was growing in the national consciousness. And there's two real kind of threads of this understanding that are common as you look back at sort of early writings. The first of that is that there will be a new king in the line of David. King David, one of the heroes of Israel, and it would be a military ruler that would kick out the Romans and restore the nation, that in many ways it would make Israel great again. That's quite a compelling narrative. Secondly, an understanding of that this Messiah would be a new priest, somebody to come and restore and cleanse the temple, the place that God dwelt. And these two things were very much, when you would talk to somebody in Israel at the time of Jesus, that would be the understanding they would have about what the Messiah would be doing, coming to do. And so the stage is set for this Messiah to come. So zooming in to the micro life of Joseph and Mary, this young couple who were betrothed to be married. It's not doing it, is it? Oh, dear. Might have to skip that one. There we go. It was a brilliant thing. It zoomed straight in on Bethlehem, but there we go. So this young couple who the passage says were betrothed to be married. And there's this culture in the ancient Near East that when young women reached the age of sort of 12 or 13, it was common for their families to arrange a marriage for them. And the agreement would be a formal one, where the young woman would be what they call betrothed to a young man, probably from the nearby area. And then it was often some time before the marriage actually took place and the young woman came to live with the young man as his wife. And this is, and it's within this time that Mary becomes pregnant. So Joseph might have only met Mary once or twice. And then he finds out that she is with child. She's pregnant. And he must have been there thinking, well, look, we've not slept together, so there's only one possibility. She must have been unfaithful. And there have been lots of things going through his head at this time. I don't know if you've ever felt betrayed. I can remember the first time I felt any sense of that kind of emotion. You know, I'm at the age now where I've probably had as many years since school as I had before and during school. So the memories of school are kind of fading a little bit. But I remember that moment clear as day. I can remember where I was standing, in which classroom, with whom was around the desk. And what was happening was that my friends were telling me that the band that I'd been in with them had actually been practicing without me for a few weeks, and that I'd been replaced as the drummer of the band by another one of my friends. Now, any of you that were there at the morning service this morning and seen my 8-year-old son, Joel, play the drums as part of the kids' band, I realised this morning, basically, that he's probably already surpassed me in terms of drumming skills. So it's not that surprising or questionable of a decision that my friends made. But the way in which they did it was to do it behind my back. And it really hurt. You know, I give that as a pretty small example. And I've sat with and seen other people go through betrayals that are so serious and so deep. And there's probably a number of different emotions that people feel, but that are common to that. And firstly, it would be, ouch, wow, that really hurts. That goes deep. Secondly, there might be a sense of humiliation. I feel like I've been taken for a fool. Is everybody laughing at me? Thirdly, there might be a sense of a loss of trust. I don't know how I'm ever going to trust somebody with this thing, with my heart again. And fourthly, there might be this sense for a desire for retribution. And it would be pretty natural for Joseph to be feeling any of these emotions in this moment when he finds out that the wife he's betrothed to is actually pregnant. And it says in verse 20, after he had considered this, the angel, and just an aside, the Greek for considered this is enthymiomai, and it's I said that quite convincingly, didn't I? Enthymiomai. It has two meanings. One is to consider, to ponder. The other way it can be translated is to fume, to be angry, to become very upset. And you can imagine that it could be one or the other. It could be either one of those meanings that is relevant in this passage. In our translations, it comes as to consider or ponder. And in an honor or shame culture like the one that existed at the time of Jesus, the implications of this for Mary were dire. Betrothal was treated like marriage. Unfaithfulness during that period of life was treated like adultery. And this pregnancy would mean her life was immediately shrouded in shame and her life was at risk. You remember the story in John 8 where there's a young woman that's found in the act of adultery, and she's dragged out into the temple courts and she's going to be stoned by the Pharisees. Well, that's the kind of thing that we're talking about here. Deuteronomy 22 says, if a man happens to meet in a town a virgin pledged to be married and he sleeps with her, you shall take both of them out to the gate of that town and stone them to death. So the law was clear. Joseph's rights were to hand Mary and the man who had slept with him over to be stoned. Yet Joseph doesn't do this. And even before he has knowledge of how Mary has done nothing wrong and that this is God, this is the Holy Spirit that that is at work here. His inclination to display a deeper, more generous form of righteousness and justice is clear. He looked beyond the penalties of the law and the shame that had been brought upon him to act with grace. Presumably thinking that if he granted Mary a certificate of divorce quietly, she would be able to marry the child's father and be provided for and be free from shame. And I'm reading beyond the text here, but I can imagine that Joseph, that wouldn't have been an easy decision for him. I can imagine him lying awake at night, stressing and fretting about how this has happened to him and how could this kind of circumstance come upon him. And then everything changes. He has this dream. And I'm paraphrasing what the angel said, but essentially what the angel's saying is, Joseph, son of David, you are a critical part of this story, not just an unfortunate piece of collateral in this. This isn't an accident. You're not the victim. You've got royal blood in you. This was part of God's plan all along. In this moment of what feels like your greatest shame, of greatest weakness, I'm stepping into space and time to unite your little story with my macro story of salvation. This is your moment of divine significance, Joe. It's probably not what you expected it to be. And in this moment of despair, I'm revealing to you my plan for the whole world. And it's got something to do with this child. And because the heart of the human problem is not the Romans, it's not the temple, it's the problem of the human heart. They need saving from their own hearts of greed and selfishness. Have courage, have faith, don't be afraid. And Joseph wakes up, and against the culture of that day, he takes Mary home to be his wife. He says, I'm going to stand with you. And what must his friends have been saying to, and his family saying to him? Joseph, what are you doing? This woman has got disgrace all over her. Why are you doing this? And, you know, we don't really know, but it's interesting to see that when Joseph and Mary go to Bethlehem, it doesn't look like they're staying with Joseph's family, even though it's his hometown. And yet, and his wife is heavily pregnant. So Joseph is a bit of a hero, really, I think. So what can we draw from this passage for us today? Well, firstly, I think there's something symbolic in the circumstances of Joseph and Mary. You know, if you take a step back from this, Pete's talk last week, he was talking about the genealogy and how God is willing to bend and the different circumstances of our lives and weave something beautiful together, like that pottery. This idea of God's grace that he wants to involve himself in our lives. But this is one of the moments in history where God could do it in whatever way he wanted. And it's an incredible thing that God chose to do it in this way. Put these circumstances upon this couple. And I think they're almost like the last in the line of the Old Testament prophets, people whose lives encounter circumstances that God chooses to bring about, which speak his words to the wider nation. For Joseph to accept his role in this, he had to cover over the shame that Mary was experiencing. And it almost becomes this prophetic act of God saying, the way that I'm going to enter this world is through somebody covering over the shame of another. And it illustrates what my people need the most. It's not a military leader from outside. It's not, but it's one that covers our shame, that cleanses us and restores us. Jesus came to fulfill the law, but not how the Jews expected it. And Joseph is an inspirational character in the Bible because his was a righteousness that went beyond a narrow kind of religiosity that relies upon the accepted things done in the most commonly accepted way, that almost has the rites and the rituals of our faith, that those stand in between him and God. He looked beyond that, Kierkegaard, the philosopher, says this thing about there being somebody having an absolute relationship to the absolute. That there's nothing standing in the way, that Joseph had that kind of relationship with God. So firstly, there's this symbolism. Secondly, Jesus covered over our shame so that we might be free, and also so that we might demonstrate the same kind of mercy to others, pointing them to God. You know, freely we've been given, freely we've received, now freely give. And we are the kind of broken healers, the restoring restorers that are illustrated by Joseph and Mary. Think about your lives for a minute. Where can you cover over the shame of another? John Wimber, one of my heroes, says the way to the city is through the house of the prostitute. And what he means by that, he's talking about the story in the Old Testament where the spies are sent out to Jericho and they have to go through Rahab's house to get into the city. And what he's saying is that in terms of the things that we feel like we want, that God's calling us to do, we have to be prepared to cover over the shame of others. Sometimes God will give us these circumstances that we get no benefit from, but there's a challenge to us in stepping into what God has for us involves covering over the shame of another and risking our reputation. Thirdly, the story of Joseph tells us that sometimes God turns up in the most unexpected places in our lives. If we're not open to God working through interesting angles, through different angles, we could miss our moments of divine significance. Like, what are the circumstances that are going on in your life at the moment that you're thinking, where did this come from? How have I ended up here? This wasn't in the plan. God, I had this sense of this is what you were calling me to, but why am I here now? Maybe it's a member of your family that's become ill. Maybe it's some sort of conflict at your work. Maybe it's some sort of relational breakdown. Maybe it's none of those things. Maybe it's just somebody you meet on the street you don't expect to meet. But it could be that in those moments, that's exactly where God is working at the moment. And he's calling you to respond by looking for a way of finding his righteousness and justice in that situation. I don't know about you, but I find that Mary and Joseph are worked into God's grand narrative in this way, quite alarming, quite unsettling, a bit sobering. It's hardly come to Jesus and experience life to the full, all your dreams coming true. I find their attitude like incredible. They're so full of joy in these stories, and yet what the situation they're put into is a really trying one. And I don't know how you think, you know, going back to that thing that I talked about at the beginning, the 5 minutes of fame, if you, in your head, the way that you might imagine getting to notoriety or being part of a narrative that's bigger than yourself. In my mind, it's going to happen on the day that I've worked the hardest. I have become the most excellent in what I do, and become the most, and that I will get significance through that. But this is a story of grace, and sometimes God doesn't work in that way. The way that he worked with Joseph is to just turn all of that on its head. And finally, I think the story of Joseph and Mary tells us that if we are concerned about our reputations, we might miss being part of God's story in that moment. I love the Luke 19:26 in the Message. It says, risk your life and get more than you've ever dreamed of. Play it safe and end up holding the bag. It's good, isn't it? Where are you looking for God's plan to be at work in your life? And what does this next week look like for you? I don't know what the kind of Christmases you're going back to are. Is it that that you're going back to somewhere where there's family breakdown? Well, if that's the case, then you've got something in common with the story of Joseph and Mary. You know, if you're going to a place where you're not sure where you're going to be, you've got something in common with them. And I hope that encourages you in whatever you face in the coming week. Perhaps you're going back to a really settled family situation, and it might be the case of God calling you to just be reaching out to somebody that you meet along the way. And finally, perhaps you're heading back to a situation with some sort of family breakdown where this is the moment of reconciliation. We have an amazing God who delights to make his power perfect in our weakness, and who came to walk with us to cover our shame. And he calls us to be part of his outworking of that and cover the shame of others.